early in the 90s, you know, we had 9 or 10 folks coming through. Now we have, you know, 300. It's gone up exponentially.
Gathering input on where and how to establish a deep water port in Alaska's Arctic. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, April 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the ACLU presents its findings on voters who were disenfranchised in the Anchorage election.
How many voters did not get to vote? Was it 50? Was it 500? Was it 5,000?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The Association of Alaska School Boards believes in investing in early childhood development. It can produce great dividends for kids and our state. More information at aasb.org. This message sponsored by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
State Representative Carl Gatto of Palmer died today at the age of 74. His death was announced on the floor of the Alaska House by Chugiak Representative Bill Stoltz.
It's with a great deal of sadness that I inform the members of this body, the people of the Valley, and the people of Alaska, that our friend and colleague Carl Gatto, Representative Gatto, as I want to remember him, passed away about an hour ago.
According to his biography on the legislature's website, Gatto was born in New York City in December 1937. He moved to Alaska in 1968 and was a career paramedic and firefighter with the Anchorage Fire Department. A Republican, Gatto was first elected to the House in 2002 and served 5 terms representing his Mat-Su Valley district. He chaired several committees, most recently House Judiciary. Gatto was battling prostate cancer this session and was often absent from the Capitol while receiving treatments. He suffered kidney failure last week. Stoltz said Gatto leaned heavily on spirituality and family in his final days.
Our sympathies to his wife Kathy, who I'm so grateful that he got to spend his last days with.
Gatto is also survived by 2 daughters and 2 sons. Governor Sean Parnell released a statement saying Alaska has lost a great public servant who will be remembered for his wit and wisdom, his commitment to education and veterans issues, and his unwavering support for the people of the Mat-Su. Matanuska Susitna Borough officials are saddened by Gatto's passing. Patty Sullivan, now a spokeswoman for the borough and a former radio reporter who followed Gatto's initial election campaigns, says he had a homespun sense of humor.
I followed him with my mic as he was approaching his potential constituents' doors, and he was a new candidate, and he would knock on the door, and an unsuspecting person would open it, and he would say, "Hello, am I late for dinner?" And the person would, you know, look a little confused, but it added levity to the situation. And they would laugh, and he would say, "I'm Carl Gatto, and I'm running for State House." And, of course, it was very effective at meeting his neighbors, learning their issues, and it was really wonderful to see that side.
Governor Parnell ordered flags lowered to half staff tomorrow. They will be returned to full staff on Thursday. Texting while driving will be illegal if the Senate concurs with a bill that passed the House today. The bill makes it a misdemeanor to read or send a text message while behind the wheel of a moving vehicle. The legislature thought they had already made it illegal until several courts around the state began to question the original law. Republican Bill Thomas of Haines, one of the bill's sponsors, defended clarifying the law.
A misdemeanor is a hell of a lot less than facing a felony for killing somebody. You're using a weapon and it's a big old vehicle. Like if it was in my truck, Lordy, who knows what that thing would do to somebody.
Opposition to the bill was based on criminalizing an action that has been done by a lot of people. Fairbanks Democrat Scott Kawasaki complained about government restrictions.
We've restricted the ability to fly in a lot of cases. We've restricted the ability to perform just regular, everyday legal acts by criminalizing them in statute, Mr. Speaker. I will oppose this bill because I think this is one step too far.
The bill next goes to the Senate for consideration and action before the session adjourns. Senator Mark Begich met with federal and state military and business leaders in Anchorage yesterday to gauge support for an Arctic deepwater port to be built somewhere in northwest Alaska. Begich, who chairs a Senate subcommittee on oceans and fisheries, has long been a supporter of an Arctic port, which he says will open up economic opportunities for the state. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
The roundtable discussion was held at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. 14 invited speakers offered perspectives on the issue based on a variety of interests, ranging from national security to improved living conditions for Alaska Natives of the remote northwest coast. Senator Mark Begich said the roundtable will kick off a series of discussions on the port program and contribute to a long-term action plan on how to deal with Arctic potential.
We know the increased shipping and traffic, oil and gas development, which we're going to see this year, tourism, research in the Arctic will lead to significant jumps in vessel traffic as well as other activity within the region.
Begich said the state of Alaska has put $1 million into the capital budget to support research on a long-term approach to the project. He said, quote, "Our goal is to see what the Arctic is going to be like in 20 years. U.S. Coast Guard Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo said the conversation is a timely one considering the interest the Arctic has generated.
We don't own it, we don't necessarily control it, but it's coming our way and we have to be prepared for it.
Ostebo said it's important to take the long view and to have a port that connects to other systems, road, rail, or air. Before starting an extremely expensive and resource-intensive operation, Ostebo said the Coast Guard is working with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the state to locate the best place to have a logistics center for the Arctic. According to Ostebo, decisions regarding Coast Guard cutters and personnel and port security will be made on a federal level. He said we want to have a seat at the table when those decisions are made. Colonel Reinhard Koenig, commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Alaska District, says he has the authority to execute permits related to water resource-based projects. Koenig says the federal cost share for design and construction could be 70% to 80%, while the federal government would pay 100% of operations costs for a port. A feasibility study could cost $3 million with the state and federal governments sharing costs. The Corps has completed a regional port study, which has identified potential sites for an Arctic port.
A public-private partnership is probably going to be required to actually move something that could potentially be of this magnitude forward.
Koenig said although planning efforts could take up to 3 years, a final site selection list will be ready by the fall of this year, which would boil down to 4 potential sites where he said we could get the most bang for the buck from an Arctic deep draft port. Only then would Congress be approached for money. Elizabeth Hensley, representing Kotzebue Area Regional Alaska Native Corporation, NANA, said a deep water port located in her area would have enormous economic benefit for Alaska Natives. But other cities have an interest. John Handeland, representing Nome, said he was encouraged to hear that the proposed project could incorporate other areas into a port system that would include more than one coastal community. Handeland said Nome is seeing more shipping every decade.
Early in the 90s, you know, we had 9 or 10 calls that folks coming through. Now we have 300. It's gone up exponentially.
The proposed port is causing ripples outside of the state. Mike Terminal, speaking for Louisiana shipbuilder Edison Schwest Offshore, says his company builds and operates 4 ice-class vessels, 2 in Antarctica, and 2 constructed for Shell for the company's exploration in Alaska.
We now have the Ivic, which is a 360-foot Polar Class 3 icebreaker, about 22,000 horsepower. This vessel is the largest, most powerful anchor-handling icebreaking vessel in the world. It will be underway about the 15th of this month to come to Alaska, and it is the newest vessel in our fleet, and it's going to definitely need a place to park.
Terminal says the energy to move forward on an Arctic port is apparent, but there is still a long way to go. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
The ACLU of Alaska says more than 150 voters have reported disenfranchisement during last week's municipal election in Anchorage. Voters that contacted the organization encountered problems in at least 54 separate polling places. The ACLU is presenting affidavits from the disenfranchised voters to the Anchorage Assembly tonight and pressing for an independent investigation. Rhonda Matthews is one of the people who called the ACLU to report that she wasn't able to vote. Matthews first went to her voting precinct at Clatt Elementary School just after 7 p.m. on April 3rd. That's where she says she was turned away by an election worker in the parking lot who told her they'd run out of ballots and directed her to vote at the Alaska Club on O'Malley.
When I arrived, I noticed that the parking lot was very crowded and that some people were exiting the building that appeared to be quite frustrated. I went inside, and when I got to the voting table, I told the poll employee that I was from Clatt Elementary and had been since sent to this location. I was told that I couldn't vote there, but they did not specify why. They told me that I could vote at the airport.
Matthews explains in her affidavit that by the time she was directed to the airport, it was 7:45 p.m., and with polling places closing at 8, there wasn't enough time, so she gave up and went home. The municipal clerk's office is still reviewing the more than 6,000 question ballots that resulted because of the lack of official ballots, and no one knows how many people gave up and didn't vote at all. Monday, the clerk apologized in a memo, saying they had sufficient ballots, but did not allocate enough of the ballots to the individual precincts. Jeffrey Mittman is the executive director of the ACLU. Mittman says an independent counsel should be appointed.
How many voters did not get to vote? Was it 50? Was it 500? Was it 5,000? We don't know. To speculate is grossly inappropriate.
Yesterday, Municipal Attorney Dennis Wheeler issued a preliminary opinion saying it appears likely the election will be validated based on a similar case back in 1989. The Assembly Chair, Debbie Osiander, says she's considering appointing an outside counsel to investigate the election, but she first wants to read reports from Wheeler and the Election Commission. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a report that looks at the role of dental therapists around the world and in Alaska.
There are in a lot of the villages on the edges of the state where we have traditionally had difficulty finding consistent dental care from dentists.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory.
A new report from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation attempts to make the case for expanding Alaska's dental health therapist program to other parts of the country. It looks at how the mid-level dental provider model is working in more than 50 countries around the world. But the American Dental Association has long been opposed to dental health therapists in the U.S., and the new report won't reverse that opposition. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Dental therapists practice in places like New Zealand, Canada, Hong Kong, and Thailand. They exist in developed and developing countries. In all, David Nash, the report's author, found evidence for dental therapists in 54 countries. Nash reviewed more than 1,000 documents from as many countries as possible for the report. He found dental therapists typically practice in public clinics and mostly care for children.
There is clear documentation that dental therapists provide quality care, safe care, efficient care, effective care, and economical care for children, much more economical than in the United States, and much more effective than in the United States.
Nash is a pediatric dentistry professor at the University of Kentucky and a longtime advocate for dental therapists. He helped launch Alaska's dental therapy program in 2005. Dental therapists provide cleanings and preventative care and can do some fillings and extractions. In Alaska, they work in rural villages. Only one other state, Minnesota, allows dental therapists to practice. Nash hopes his report for the Kellogg Foundation will help change that by providing evidence for best practices for the profession.
So that our public policy leaders and our legislators and so forth, they They know what exists. They know what the truth is.
But Nash does not believe the report is likely to change minds at the American Dental Association. The organization fought to stop Alaska's dental therapist program and is against any expansion to other states. The ADA calls the Kellogg report an advocacy document intended to support a predetermined conclusion. Dr. Bill Kalnon is president of the ADA.
It is not a scientific systematic study. And that's what, a science-based organization like the ADA obviously would prefer to see.
The ADA doesn't support dental therapists because they can extract teeth and fill cavities without the direct supervision of a dentist, a practice they call unsafe. The organization agrees with the Kellogg Foundation that the amount of tooth decay in underserved areas like rural Alaska is a public health crisis. But Kalnon says dental therapists are only a short-term fix to the problem, and he says the new report is short-sighted.
I think what it does is it misses the point that the ADA has really been trying to make around the country, and that is the fact that workforce issues really are only one small piece of a much larger puzzle.
The ADA is piloting a new provider called Community Dental Health Coordinator to provide education and preventative services. But Dr. Mary Willard, who trains Alaska's dental therapists, says that's exactly what dental therapists do. She says the bulk of their work involves cleanings, sealants, and dental health education. She hopes the new report will help clear up some of the biggest misperceptions about the program.
The fear that I see out there, the misunderstandings, is in regards to, is this a safe practice, and can a therapist who's trained in only 2 years post-high school actually provide safe, appropriate, and competent care?
Dr. Willard says so far there have been no complaints about the work of Alaska's dental therapists. The state now has 25 certified dental therapists working in the tribal health care system in remote rural villages like Klawak and Aniak. Willard directs the Dental Therapist Training School in Anchorage, a partnership with the University of Washington that started in 2007.
In the few short years we've been around, we've been able to increase the number of providers out there in rural Alaska quite significantly. There are in a lot of the villages and the edges of the state where we have traditionally had difficulty finding consistent dental care from dentists.
Dr. Willard says the dental system in the U.S. works well for people who have money and insurance, but it's failing the rest of the population. Her focus is on expanding the dental therapist program in Alaska, but she hopes to see dental therapists practicing soon in other underserved areas of the U.S. as well. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
300 military personnel are in communities throughout the Norton Sound region this week and next for Operation Arctic Care. Arctic Care has been happening in Alaska for several years. This year, it's a partnership between Norton Sound Health Corporation and several branches of the military. KNOM's Matthew Smith has the story.
Arctic Care has two goals. The first is to bring medical and veterinary care to residents in 16 area communities. The second, to help military personnel receive training that brings medical services out of the hospital and into the field.
We're bringing up with us Army Reserve, Active Duty Navy, Navy Reserve, Active Duty Air Force, Air National Guard, and Army Guard from Alaska, Colorado, and Arizona.
That's Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Sherilyn Lang. She's the Task Force Med Commander for Arctic Care this year, and she's in charge of all of the medical, dental, optometry, and vet teams operating in the region. That includes a Navy team from Virginia that specializes in making prescription eyeglasses in the field, Army Reserve dentists from California,
gastroenterology, cardiology, then there's a certified registered nurse anesthetist, there's an anesthesiologist coming up,
and many, many more. For the past week, there have been Blackhawks, C-23 Sherpas, C-130s, and the massive C-17s flying into Nome. And they've been bringing in
cargo. 70,000 pounds of cargo. It's 11,000 pounds of equipment and medical supply to each village. The dental equipment is very big and heavy. The eye fabrication equipment is 3 pallets that come to 3,000 pounds. And Diomede, we're taking water, so it's quite a lot.
Delivering care in rural Alaska, Lang says, provides a training opportunity for soldiers to practice what they can do in a field setting, far away from the hospital and the equipment that they're used to.
One of the things you do when you go overseas and begin to do any kind of effort as a medical unit, oftentimes you're forced to fall on into an existing structure that isn't what you usually work in, and you have to make it work. So you could be as close as 1 mile from the battlefield and have to make a lean-to work for whatever you need.
The other goal of Arctic Care is giving residents of the region access to care they usually couldn't get without a trip to Nome or Anchorage. Patty Lilly is the Assistant Vice President for Community Health Services at Norton Sound, and she's leading the hospital efforts for Arctic Care. She says that with so much expertise traveling to villages, the operation will be able to provide care for those most in need.
This opportunity is going to be really good for people who maybe have mobility issues where it's not easy for them to get in and out of planes, or if for economic reasons maybe they don't go to the doctor as often, or if they're in that awkward situation where they earn income, but they're not Medicaid eligible. And it's also a really good opportunity for people who are non-IHS beneficiaries to be seen by a medical doctor out in the villages.
And under the Arctic Care program, medical services provided by the military are free of charge.
All services given by Arctic Care providers are free.
Starting this Wednesday, teams will make their way to villages throughout the Norton Sound. In some communities, Unalakleet, Shishmaref, Savunga, Stebbins, and Gamble, they will, as Lang says,
those five villages, the team will go and they'll rock steady for 10 days.
Elsewhere, mobile teams will visit Brevig, Gullivan, Koyuk, St. Michael's, and Wales this week. And on the 16th, after a day for travel, they'll be switching to the remaining villages: Elam, Diomede, Chactulik, White Mountain, and Teller. There will also be some cancer pre-screenings, endoscopies, and colonoscopies going on in Nome at the specialty clinic at Norton Sound Health Corporation. I'm Matthew Smith.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
The legislature today approved all but one of the people appointed by the governor to serve on state boards and commissions. Members also had no opposition to the choice of Michael Garrity to be the state's next attorney general. The joint session of the House and Senate refused Lynn Keough as a member of the Board of Game, operator of a guide service on the Kenai Peninsula and Kachemak Bay. Keough was appointed last summer. Opposition arose when it was disclosed he had an old violation on his record. He had been cited for using a 50-horsepower motor on his boat in an area where the size limit was 35 horsepower. Keough had said he didn't know the motor was oversized. But Kenai Republican Tom Wagner said anyone guiding professionally should have known better.
I happen to own a 35 horse with a riverboat, and I know what would happen to that riverboat if I put a 50 horse on it. And I know the speed I would pick up and the additional load I would carry. He broke the law, and the sad thing is he is not the only guide on the Kenai River that broke the law. A lot of the guides broke the law, but he was caught, and when he told us he didn't know, I can't believe that fact. That's why my vote will be against him. He wasn't honest with the committee.
Republican Alan Dick defended Keough, saying the opposition was really about Keough's stand on predator control.
I believe I rise to speak in behalf of those subsistence users that need the state to manage according to sustain yield principle. I rise in representing sportsmen and those of all those who have dealt with this issue in the past. And we really like to put it to rest and have and respect the governor's appointment.
Challenges were raised to the governor's appointment of two members of the Fish Board and one regent, but those appointments were confirmed. The snow is deep and the purse is big, so organizers expect a good turnout at this year's Arctic Man. The unique race in the Hoodoo Mountains near Paxson brings together snow machiners, skiers, and snowboarders for Alaska's biggest annual party. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The procession of motorhomes and trucks with trailers in tow loaded with snow machines has been building over the past week, and the pace will pick up over the next few days leading up to the 27th annual Arctic Man Ski and Snow Go Classic. Race director Howard Thies says the course is looking especially good this year because Mother Nature has been generous.
The snowpack is the biggest we've probably seen in 15 years. We average anywhere from 6 to 7 feet everywhere you went.
That's why Thies says he expects a big turnout for this year's event for both competitors and spectators.
At the rate we're going, we'll have 60 competitors, the most we've had probably in 10 years.
And that's why this year's purse is so big, which in turn is attracting even more competitors from all over, including thrill-seeking Alaskans and, increasingly, the likes of X Games participants and Winter Olympic athletes.
The purse is going to be up to about $112,000, $115,000. First place in the men's ski division, we've guaranteed $27,000.
All of which is generating a lot of buzz and boosting the estimated number of spectators that will turn out for Arctic Man. Some 14,000 are expected this year, creating, as they say, Alaska's fourth biggest city for a weekend. Alaska State Troopers Lieutenant Lonnie Piskoya says that means lines of vehicles, including slower moving rigs with trailers, will slow traffic on both the Richardson and Glenn highways leading to Arctic Man. Piskoya says troopers will be out in force on those two roadways throughout this week to ensure motorists don't risk themselves or others by passing the slow rigs unsafely.
People are going to pass motorhomes, they're going to pass trailers with snow machines, and so we know that there's going to be a lot of traffic, so we put troopers out there for safety reasons.
Piskoya says troopers also will, when possible, bust the drivers of the slow rigs who don't pull over when five or more vehicles get stuck behind them. He says troopers also will be on the lookout for drunk driving.
One of the primary focuses for our highway traffic team is for DUI enforcement. They will be looking out for that.
Arctic Man has had its problems with excessive drinking over the years. A Fairbanks man was badly injured last year when he was hit by a snow machine driven by what troopers suspect was a drunken operator. Piskoya says troopers will be patrolling the area around Arctic Man on snow machine 24/7. And he recommends those who overdo it on Saturday should ensure they take the time to sober up Sunday before they head back.
Give yourself plenty of time, get some rest, and ensure that you don't have any remaining or residual alcohol in your system.
In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer and Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Matthew Smith in Nome, and Tim Ellis in Delta. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.